The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, a policy in Seattle that I think we can all get behind. Plus, cuckoo for COVID, a bizarre requirement to participate in a polar plunge. Also, Dr. Anthony Fauci gets honest about a possible vaccine mandate for domestic air travel, why he says it's not about slowing the spread.
Anything that could get people more vaccinated would be welcome.
Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. Thanks for being here. I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday weekend. Ours was really low key, in part because of the weather. And then we kind of spent our Christmas. We have a little tradition, my boyfriend and I, where we go up to the middle of nowhere to a mountain lake and play fetch with the dogs and just hang out. And it was really beautiful, covered with snow, super relaxing. So I hope that you guys got to relax as well on Sunday. All of our plans we made kind of went out the window with all the snow. I don't know where you guys are at right now, but out in East King County, we have probably a foot of snow. I did a little bit of shoveling today, like the bare minimum required, and then took the dogs for a walk in the snow. So it was really nice. You know, the last podcast I had before Christmas, Friday on Christmas Eve, I will say was a little doom and gloom. I was not in the best mood over this proposal out of Olympia, but it was sort of more than that. It was the lack of self-awareness from some lawmakers, the, as I called it, problematic priorities of some lawmakers and just where they choose to focus their time and energy. I think that was my frustration more so than the individual bill itself. I mean, I've seen a lot of silly bills come out of Olympia, but, you know, you start to look at and think about, gosh, all the priorities that we have going on right now with the homeless crisis, with crime increasing, just trying to get out of this pandemic. And then you look at the things that some lawmakers are choosing to prioritize. Of course, I'm talking about the bill that would ease sentencing for people who kill someone in drive-by shooting. And I think that's where my frustration comes from. So anyway, in the spirit of just trying to embrace the coming new year, I'll start the podcast off with something a little more agreeable. I was just searching around today for some more lighthearted story that all sides can get together on. And I found one, not the most hard-hitting story of the decade, but I personally care about it a lot. So let's start by talking about Pike Place Market. For those of you who live in Washington State, I know many people who listen to this podcast do, or even those who have visited Seattle, of course you've been to Pike Place Market. This is a place I used to love going to when I first moved to the city about 12 years ago. My friends and I, we'd always go down to this Irish bar called Kells, you know, go to find men, and we're in our early 20s and would get all liquored up and felt pretty safe down there. I mean, it's not something I would feel safe doing today, given the state of downtown, but I have a lot of fond memories of Pike Place Market. But one thing about it has always bothered me. So you've got this market that's just three blocks of cobblestone. And for whatever reason, about 100 years ago, they cleared sort of the stands that used to be there and let people use it as a road and park on it and drive through it. It's always a disaster. I never understood why they allowed cars in front of Pike Place Market. And by the way, I know people talk about the war on cars, where in Seattle they're trying to limit your ability to be able to use a car to get anywhere. I'm definitely opposed to the war on cars, but this is an example where I think pedestrians should be prioritized. So there is now this effort to close Pike Place Market to vehicles, which I think every single person should be in favor of. And in fact, the Seattle Times editorial board came out, I believe on Sunday, in their opinion section and said, hey, let's do this. Let's close Pike Place Market off to cars. And this comes after a councilman, Andrew Lewis, who's in charge of the downtown area, talked about prioritizing this idea in 2022, maybe the only thing I've ever agreed with Councilman Andrew Lewis on is what he wants to do to Pike Place Market. So, hey, I think going into the new year in Seattle, this is a piece of legislation that all sides can gather around and be excited about, make Pike Place Market a better tourist attraction, make it safer, turn all that into little outdoor dining and restaurants and close off the street. So I really hope this happens. I had tweeted that I was in favor of it, and I did hear some pushback from folks who think that ride shares should be able to go down in there. And what about disabled people? Which I agree, you ought to have a few spots for disabled parking. But above all, a very non-controversial idea that I really do hope happens. So that's my my two cents on it. Would really like that to be a pedestrian street only. Okay, I wanted to talk about the new CDC guidance when it comes to quarantine periods. They just updated their guidance today, and it has to do with recommended isolation periods and quarantine periods for folks who are either positive for COVID-19 or exposed to COVID-19. And I genuinely wonder, like, look, I know that some people use this CDC guidance, like businesses, to try to set their standards and just make them even and saying, hey, we're following CDC guidance, and that's fine. But this is so confusing, genuinely. I'm just going to read you straight up from this press release from the CDC and see if you can follow along, okay? CDC is updating the recommended quarantine period for those exposed to COVID-19 for people who are unvaccinated or are more than 6 months out from their second mRNA dose or more than 2 months after the J&J vaccine and not yet boosted. CDC now recommends quarantine for 5 days, followed by strict mask use for an additional 5 days. Alternatively, if a 5-day quarantine is not feasible, it is imperative that an exposed person wear a well-fitting mask at all times when around others for 10 days after exposure. Individuals who have received their booster shot do not need to quarantine following an exposure but should wear a mask for 10 days after the exposure. For all those exposed, best practice would also include a test for COVID-19 at day 5 after exposure. I'm sorry. Okay, if I've been exposed possibly to COVID-19 to someone who has it, I'm just going to be really careful. I'm going to stay home if I don't feel good, maybe give it a couple days at home, wear a mask when I'm around other people. I don't get it. It's too much. And I do really wonder if there's anybody listening who goes and looks at, okay, what does the CDC recommend? Have they updated their recommendations? And then you follow their recommendations. It's just fascinating to me. And there continues to be just things that I gotta say are just beyond my comprehension as it pertains to our handling of the pandemic. There's a story making the rounds. I read it in the Post-Millennial. It was written by Ari Hoffman. So there is this tradition of a polar bear swim on Elkhai Beach in Seattle. And a polar bear swim is, of course, you go, you know, jump into the water in the middle of the winter. And water around here is already cold, so I can't even imagine how cold it is this time of year. Every New Year's Day, they do the Elkhai Beach Polar Bear Swim. And the organizers put out that the event was indeed going to be happening this year, but there are some changes or restrictions in order to participate in this swim. Okay, adults must be vaccinated and boosted against COVID-19. Fine. I mean, this is an outdoor event, but it can get a little crowded. And honestly, it's really common for anything in Seattle to have a vaccine requirement. It says you and your group must be COVID-free, be in good health, and distance yourselves 6 feet from others while on the beach. Fine. Like, no big deal. Okay, it's Seattle. None of that surprises me. Here's the real kicker. Everyone must wear a mask. Let me just, if nobody's said this yet, don't wear a mask while you're swimming, especially in freezing waters where you're going to be gasping for air. I saw this hilarious response on Twitter telling people not to waterboard themselves by wearing a mask while doing the polar plunge. There's a lot of people who are expected to participate in this, although I would be curious what that mask requirement does to the attendance. It says, for over 15 years, the Elkhai Beach Polar Bear Swim has been about washing away the complexities of the previous year and bathing in the unlimited possibilities that the new year provides, all while pushing us out of our comfort zone. Prior to COVID, we had over 700 swimmers. In 2022, we need this event more than ever. I will note that even the CDC recommends against wearing masks while swimming, because obviously when your mask gets wet, it becomes very hard to breathe through it. The CDC actually explicitly says this on their website, that you shouldn't swim in a mask. So I'll be very curious. I wish all of the swimmers well, but again, I really hope that there is some clarity or change of heart about requiring participants to dive into frigid water with a piece of fabric over their face. I just don't anticipate that ending well. One other COVID story that I wanted to talk about, and again, you know, whenever I talk about vaccines, just so people don't say, oh, she's an anti-vaxxer, I have the vaccine. I haven't got a booster yet. I was going to get one this weekend, but then I was like, what if I get sick from it? I don't want to be like sick. I heard some people had bad reactions to them. I was like, I don't want to be sick for Christmas. And now it's snowed. So maybe next week. Anyway, so there was a story in the Seattle Times, record number of COVID infections reported in King County. The story begins, coronavirus infections in King County have skyrocketed in the past week as the Omicron variant continues to surge, flying past the county's previous highest case number, according to county data. According to the Times and the King County Department of Health, the county has seen a 195% increase in cases in the past 7 days, averaging 1,586 cases per day. And of course, we saw this in 2020 as well, around the holidays. People are gathering indoors, they're attending events. You know, we've got New Year's Eve coming up, people went to Christmas parties, etc. But what I thought was very interesting about this article, you know, I saw somebody share it and say, hey, get the jab, folks. But here's the thing. King County is one of the most vaccinated counties in the entire country. More than 93% of people over 16 have at least begun their vaccination regimen. 12 and over, that number is 92%. 5 and older, that number is 88%. So again, King County has an incredibly high vaccination rate, yet we are seeing case counts that are above previous peaks. But what I think is important, and there has been a conversation now about something we should have had a conversation about a long time ago, which is really looking at the number of deaths and not the number of cases. Because when you look at the number of cases, again, in King County, there's been a 195% increase in the last 7 days. But there has been a 70% decrease in deaths in the last 14 days. So 195% increase in cases, a 70% decrease in deaths. And I'm certainly not saying throw caution to the wind, but it is clear that, you know, you might have these spikes in cases that are two levels like we saw in 2020, but the number of people dying is nowhere close. And then you've got Dr. Anthony Fauci, who came out just a few hours ago, and he told the public that they should cancel New Year's Eve plans because of Omicron.
When you're talking about a New Year's Eve party, we have 30, 40, 50 people celebrating. You do not know the status of their vaccination. I would recommend strongly stay away from that this year. There will be other years to do that, but not this year.
And honestly, that's not an unreasonable thing for a public health official to say like, hey, maybe don't go to a big party right now. But then in the same breath, he turns around and endorses a different measure that isn't about reasonable public health. And he actually acknowledges, and I'm going to play this for you, he acknowledges what this is really about. So President Joe Biden was asked about whether there should be a vaccine requirement for domestic air travel. And he said, you know, my team doesn't think that's necessary right now. And then Dr. Fauci went on ABC This Week with Jonathan Karl, and Jonathan Karl asked him about it.
There is no vaccine requirement for domestic air travel in the United States. And when the president was asked, should there be one, he said that his team has said it's not necessary at this point. Do you agree with that, that there shouldn't be a vaccine requirement for domestic air travel?
Well, it depends on what you want to use it for.
Dr. Fauci went on to say one thing that's very important here. He acknowledged that air travel, if you've got a mask on, is relatively safe.
I mean, I think if you look at wearing a mask and the filtration on planes, things are reasonably safe.
Okay, and again, so why would it be necessary to have a vaccine mandate to get on a plane? If Dr. Fauci is saying, yeah, you put a mask on, you're just fine on an airplane. Well, he acknowledges that if there were to be such a mandate that would require you to show proof of a vaccine before you get on a plane, that the only purpose it would serve is to force more people to get vaccinated.
A vaccine requirement for a person getting on the plane is just another level of getting people to have a mechanism that would spur them to get vaccinated. Namely, you can't get on a plane unless you're vaccinated, which is just another one of the ways of getting requirements, whatever that might be. So, I mean, anything that could get people more vaccinated would be welcome.
And this is where I bring the conversation back to King County. King County, Washington, one of the most vaccinated counties in the entire country. yet they have seen in the past 7 days a 195% increase in cases because of the Omicron variant. Yet in the past 14 days, there's been a 78% decrease in deaths. And so here you have Dr. Fauci saying anything that helps people get vaccinated is a good thing. Yet it is clear that even vaccinated people are spreading this virus around. But despite the fact that vaccinated and unvaccinated people are spreading Omicron, the death rate is still very, very low compared to where it was a year ago. So at least Dr. Fauci is being honest about what the point of a mandate, of a vaccine mandate for travel would be. But it is clearly not to stop or slow the spread of Omicron. So he is on the record as having said that, if the administration or Dr. Fauci change their minds down the road. Okay, just a quick follow-up to the story that I talked about on the podcast on Friday and also on the digital show on Sunday about this new bill proposed in Washington State that would ease the punishment for people who kill someone in a drive-by shooting. I think it's one of the most ill-advised, tone-deaf bills I have ever seen come out of the State House in Olympia. I will say I did reach out to the bill's sponsors over the weekend. I told them, hey, you know, I'll have an open mind and an open heart if you want to discuss your rationale for this. I will say I haven't heard back from either of them. You know, it is a holiday weekend, so I'm not going to make too much of that. But I do hope they'll talk to me about it and help me understand where they're coming from on it. You know, this is a bill that was pre-filed, and it got me looking at some of the other bills that have been pre-filed for this legislative session. And, you know, one of the things I noticed is a lot of it is them cleaning up messes that they made. You know, I've talked a lot about the long-term care tax debacle that's been going on, a tax passed by lawmakers in 2019 that's supposed to go into effect on January 1st, but now at the 11th hour, Democrats are acknowledging that there's a bunch of problems with it. So you've got all these bills already introduced ahead of the session, which begins on January 10th, meant to fix it or change it or repeal it altogether. There are 7 bills already introduced that address this. And so again, it's time spent cleaning up a mess that they created 2 years ago. And we already know how quick these sessions go by, how many competing priorities they have. I know that not all bills and laws are perfect, and sometimes there has to be tweaks, but this one's obviously a mess. And now you're going to spend a good chunk of this legislative session trying to fix something that was broken from the start. It's going to distract you from other priorities we have going on, like homelessness and crime, trying to pull ourselves out of the pandemic. And it's not the only thing that they're spending time this session trying to kind of redo. You've got at least 8 bills that have already been proposed that are designed to change some of the police reform legislation that was pushed through this past legislative session and that we've seen a tremendous amount of fallout from. For instance, the bill that dramatically reduces the ability to engage in police pursuits. There's just a number of things that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of bills being rushed through without a lot of engagement, without a lot of thought. And then they just end up spending more time down the road trying to fix it. And so when I look at this one bill that's been pre-filed that would reduce the penalty for drive-by shooters who kill, I really hope this isn't something that they push through. And then only after they see the negative implications of it, they come back in a year and try to fix. We really need to get out of that, making big changes in a short period of time without properly identifying the potential impacts, the potential problems, the potential consequences. That's not good governance. And it's frustrating that they're now going to spend time where they could be working on some of the other crises in our state, fixing things that they just did. The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. You can visit them at 1530mortgage.com. To close each podcast, I like to thank a subscriber to Undivided. While the podcasts are free, it is not free to produce all the video content and to keep this podcast going. And so subscribers are so incredibly important to that mission. So today I want to thank Larry Olson, who is an Undivided subscriber on Patreon. He told me, I became a subscriber because I'm tired of the confirmation bias, echo chamber style of news media the fringe clings to. You're our sword of light to cut through that darkness. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Larry Olson, for being an undivided subscriber since November. It means the world to me. I can't continue this mission without people like you. So I appreciate those kind words and your support. If you would like to join Larry and the growing undivided community of subscribers, you have two options. You can subscribe on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Or you can become a supporter on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. And to all of you, thank you so much for joining me on the Undivided podcast. By doing so, you are showing that you want to be part of a movement that is dedicated to giving common sense a comeback.